Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/FTSW. Over 100,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player.
I'll handle this. The Avatar is back. This is Appa, my flying bicycle.
Right. And this is Katara, my flying sister.
That's right, I'm Sokka. It's pronounced with an Akka.
My name is Tom Beifong, and I'll need 4 tickets.
My name is Zuko, Prince of the Fire Nation, and heir to the throne.
Don't flatter yourself.
You lost me at Zuko.
Tiny Zuko! You look so cute!
I can tell you're lying.
Why would I let go of Katara? I love her.
Anybody got a problem with that?
You'll have to leave now. Your lemur is harassing my sparrow keys.
Those are enemy birds.
Even that oaf knows to concentrate on what he's doing.
He does have a heart, doesn't he?
Come on!
Shuffle on, I get you.
Stay flaming. Now, check this out.
Hello and welcome to From the Spirit World, a legendary Avatar The Last Airbender and The Legend of Korra podcast for DongWuFang.net. If you want extensive in-depth discussion on Korra from longtime knowledgeable fans of Avatar and longtime fandom members, then this is the podcast for you. I'm your main host, Dylan, and today I'm joined by mini-hosts Ari.
Hi.
Delaney.
Hello.
Colin.
Hello.
And Philip.
Hello.
This is a mini-cast where we discuss a single Avatar Korra topic for a brief period of time. You can email us at dylan@dongwufang.net and post on the forums at dongwufang.net/forums. On this podcast or mini-cast, we will be discussing The Headband, which is one of my favorite episodes, and I know a lot of other people like it too, and we must discuss it because it is amazing, basically. I guess I'll start things off by saying I guess this is one of my, probably my 30th time or something seeing this. That's maybe an exaggeration, I don't know. But I genuinely think this is one of the best episodes of Avatar, despite its maybe frivolity. I don't know if that's a word. Frivolity, okay. Yeah. And also genuinely think it's a great episode of television, maybe one of the best. Which is quite saying a lot, but I think it's true. It's, really good and totally solid. It has its, this unique, quirky sense of humor, which is really great. And it just does a lot of really good things. I guess, give me your thoughts on The Headband and if it changed watching it, because we all rewatched it before this podcast. Delaney, why don't you start us off?
Well, essentially, I agreed with everything you just said. And it's my opinion of it has not changed, except maybe I love it more every time I watch it. And, I mean, I'm probably up there while I haven't watched it. I only own the third season of Avatar, but every time I go and go to watch an episode, no matter which one I just set out to watch first, like The Painted Lady or something, I immediately watch The Headband first because I see it and freak out and have to watch it. It's just, the humor, it's great, and also the lighting in the cave is awesome. it's just great to watch. And, of course, That dance. All the feels.
The Katango.
Yes, the Katango.
As it is known. Okay. Ari, what are your thoughts?
Again, it's awesome. Pretty much agree with what you guys said. I actually pulled up a list of episodes that I made. I think I had it, number 7. So that certainly says something. New outfits, always cool. Wang Fire, who has the coolest beard in Avatar, by far. And, yeah, I mean, it's great.
Yeah. Colin, what are your thoughts?
It's a really good episode. It's what really speaks out to me in it is the music. The music is just, phenomenal, this episode. And, like I said, everyone pretty much has already been setting this, but I like the whole little storyline. It's a good episode in general, so yeah.
Yeah. Oh, you have a unique perspective among us, I would say, in that you are a Zutarian, correct?
Yeah.
So what's it like as a Zutarian watching this fairly Katang-centric and Mako-centric episode?
I don't mind it. There's always going to be episodes geared towards the Katang, but I don't really mind it.
You still appreciate the...
I can appreciate it. it's a good episode. Like, it's over the good, like, the goodness quality episode over, like, looks that affects Kat Aang or Zutara. So, that's what I say.
Okay.
I think it helps that you're not, like, a crazy attack Zutarian.
Like someone.
Yeah, like some people.
Some mini-host. Okay, Philip, what are your thoughts?
Like Colin said, I think this has a lot of good music to it. Like, even just small little moments, it has really good music choices. And also, one thing I noticed upon rewatching this that I hadn't noticed before is just how, like, I don't know how to say that, soft, kind of, that Azula looks. Like, in the finale, you know, she looks so sharp, you know, there's so much harsh shadows, but she looks really soft. She looks like the 14-year-old girl that she's supposed to be in this episode.
Hmm,
which was just something interesting I noticed upon rewatching.
Azula's fairly sympathetic in this episode. It's pretty interesting.
I think what helps is... Oh, sorry.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say about... like what you, immediately when you said that, I thought of, like, because they, you know, the previously on Avatar, the one for this episode, because we're remembering a... I think it's The Awakening. Yeah, that's the episode before the headband. The, because, like, when they're in the bedroom, and, like, that, I feel like that was Azula's softest moment, and I feel like that probably helped, like, seeing her softer, because it's moving on from that, you know?
I noticed it off the bat from that previously on.
Yeah, this whole area, section of episodes, beginning of season 3, Azula is fairly sympathetic. Let's start getting into, I guess, some specifics, but mostly, I guess, we'll talk on a general level. This episode is probably, like, 80% Aang, and then there's the Zuko B-line, which accomplishes a lot in a small amount of time. But let's quickly go over Zuko first, I guess. Get him out of the way. It's not like his scenes are bad, it's just not the focus of the episode. So we have, like, 5 or 6, like, quick cuts to him. He checks on Iroh outside with the guard. Then he, like, tells the guard not to see anyone. He visits Iroh. Then we have the amazing Mako scene. Then he freaks out with Iroh, and then he hires Combustion Man at the end. And I guess highlighting the Mako scene among these, definitely the best Mako part of the entire series.
Definitely.
I don't hate you, I don't hate you too. Orange is such an awful color. Yeah, I think
that's definitely like a famous Mako line, is the I don't hate you.
It
just sums up the relationship so well.
So yes. Well, so well written, so well executed, and it's just a beautiful scene too with the sunset.
And then the Azula, that helps, that's...
Yeah,
just makes it.
Yeah, and then she's like, you know, I want to talk when we're not leaving. It's like, Tylee, you need to help braid her hair. She's like, oh, well, that sounds important. I'd better go.
It's like, the look May shoots her is fantastic.
Not only is the scene, so amazing, this like kind of is one of the scenes that directly sets up the betrayal later. Like, Azula's foreseeing like May too close to Zuko. It's one of those things that plants the seed. And it just, there's a lot of things in this episode where the series would be so much less successful without these scenes, and this is one of them, despite this being more of a quote-unquote filler episode. It's really good.
And we can appreciate it better after having seen all the episodes, like these little foreshadowing moments.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah,
so that's also the thing. They definitely make a lot more sense in hindsight than they do watching it the first time. I mean, when you see this, you're like, oh, that must be setting up May for betraying Azula later. Like, that's not what it initially seems.
Just like when you read a book again, you notice the things after you know what happens.
Yeah.
So.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just curious just how it affects, because it does affect your viewing experience. Because we talked about Colin being a Zutarian. How many people, I mean, who here is a real Mako? Like, I know Mako's my second favorite ship.
I mean,
actually don't like Mako.
Not a surprise.
I'm fine with Mako. I don't really ship Zuko with anyone else or Mei with anyone else, so Mako.
So they're all right together because you just don't care.
I guess Mako's
I
guess Mako's my third favorite ship, but other than this episode, there's no real times when I ship it that much.
Yeah, I mean, I like Mako. It's good. It's definitely not my favorite ship, but it's overall fairly entertaining. You know, they have a couple good scenes. There's also in Nightmares and Daydreams, they have some, you know.
Yeah, that's true. They have some good scenes in Nightmares and Daydreams.
I definitely prefer Mako to Zuki. Yeah, no. I infinitely prefer.
Not, I'll go about that in The Promise.
Not feeling Mizuki? Oh.
No. Mizuki. That's an abomination. It doesn't exist in my mind.
Oh, it'd be.
Well, let's start getting into the Aang parts of the episode.
The most important parts.
Basically. This does so much, this episode, and really, the focus on Aang and confident Aang, this episode pretty much is Aang season 3 in a nutshell, or at least the beginning of season 3. And it's just, he's so likable, I would say, in this episode. And he gets to act normal, like something he doesn't really get to do the rest of the series, and it's so, like...
I mean, definitely shows off all of his best character traits in this episode.
Yeah, well, except he doesn't have too much idealism to show, but yeah, definitely.
Well, really, to me, like I always liked Aang as a character, but the first time I saw this episode, this is when I really started to just love Aang as a character, where he became, like, one of my favorites. So I feel like that really speaks to, like, just how well they portrayed Aang in this episode, and, like, and you're right, it is, like, it's his character in a nutshell. And especially speaks up after, you know, what happens in The Awakening, you know, his freak out and almost dying, and then, you know, realization and such.
Yeah, it's such a contrast to the previous one.
Also, continue.
No, you go.
Also, the scene with the dodging, forget the bully's name.
Hide,
yeah. He was dodging him. That was, well, first of all, it was really elaborate. Second of all, I think it spoke to a lot of, you know, children who are bullied a lot and then proceed to get in trouble.
That's good to point out that scene, yeah, because I was saying maybe not too much Aang idealism. That scene shows his pacifism and stuff like that.
Yeah.
That's just a really well-executed... This whole episode is really well-executed. I'm going to probably say that a lot for about a lot of scenes.
Because it is, and that's okay.
Fourth best episode, in my opinion. The thing that stands out the most to me about this episode, I guess I probably maybe just said that 5 minutes ago, but is the quirky humor of it. And one thing that contributes a lot to that is Aang's antiquated Fire Nation speech and references.
Yeah, the out-of-time stuff is great.
It's Flameo.
All the time me and my brother are like, Flameo, it just, you pick up on it immediately, and you just love it.
It comes out of nowhere, and it's just amazing. It makes no sense, but it's just still... we got Stay Flamin', Hotman, and Flameo, and all are amazing.
I think Flameo's the best, though. Just my personal preference.
You can't compare them. They're just all equally amazing. And it's just...
They have their own purposes. This is true.
I don't know who came up with this. Maybe episode writer John O'Brien. Maybe everyone. Just the fact that the Fire Nation would have these type of things. Because it's so ridiculous. But at the same time, there's so much... so many basic jokes, like playing on fire in this episode. It's kind of crazy. All those... then you got the Wang Fire...
Sapphire Fire is still the funniest thing.
That's still
Fire. It's kind of like, you know, if you hear from like your grandparents or something about like ridiculous kind of things like that they had, that, you know, to us seem so silly.
Yeah.
And it's kind of the same thing, like 100 years ago, this is what they had, and now everyone's like, that makes no sense.
And it's really the first time we see Aang really, struggling, well, not really struggling, but first time we really see him, and it's emphasize that he was born 100 years ago.
I don't know. I think Omashu covers that pretty well as well.
But I just meant, like, culturally.
I know what you mean. Definitely this episode does. A lot of episodes do things multiple times different ways, but this episode, the two things I say, I think I said this on the episode ranking podcast, this episode does amazingly that really the other episodes don't cover as well, are one, Aang is a normal kid. And two is that the Fire Nation are people too, and this episode executes that in such a frivolous plot, and it just speaks to how well written it is and how well executed. Director Joaquin Dos Santos does amazing too. His first episode directed, and John O'Brien, who gets a lot of flack for writing some of the bottom tier episodes, writes just an incredible gem here. Flaws in this episode. I used to think that the Toph shoes part was a flaw, but I mean, now that I've seen it 1,000 times, I totally get what's happening. But it's still a little bit confusing. This whole episode's rushed, which is why rushed in a good way, as opposed to other episodes.
Yeah, I think it definitely fits like the upbeat kind of music, and it It's fast, but I think it's meant to be fast.
Yeah, definitely.
And it fits them rushing toward the Day of Black Sun, like their invasion. It just kind of fits, because, you know, going from cave to cave and stuff.
That's true. So the thing that this episode does, interestingly, I think that adds to its charm, but it's kind of ridiculous, is it has this, like, fake suspense moment, and it is two of them within a minute of each other.
That really killed me, because, like, you know that would never come up realistically.
I don't know why they did this, because they're right next to each other, and they're both ridiculous, but they're, I don't know, I just, it, to me, it just adds to the episode at this point. Like, I can't even see it as a flaw anymore.
Yeah, there's just a couple little silly moments like that, like where Sokka is just like rises up out of nowhere and falls back down.
Oh, I think that's great. I love that.
Or when he jumps over and dies.
I don't think it's bad. Yeah. Love that is bad. It's just it's a more lighthearted side of the episode.
Yeah, definitely.
Just adds to the charm.
Yes.
Sokka's like trying to be a superhero and he kind of fails by crashing into the dirt.
There are also some great Aang facial expression moments in this episode.
That's true.
Angry. Like when, like the, I think we're referring to the first suspense moment, and then like just that I don't even know how to describe the mouse frog. I don't even know face, and then they grab him. It's great.
Also, about Aang's facial expressions, he looked a lot younger in this episode in comparison to the Painted Lady and the Awakening. Because I saw those not recently, but I remember he looks a lot younger in this episode, like the facial expressions he makes and, I guess, his mannerisms.
Interesting. I could see that a little bit.
It kind of adds to the lightheartedness of the episode.
Yeah.
Also, I'd like to say he looks like a monkey. Now, think about it. He looks like a monkey. Which isn't bad. I just was watching it. I was like, he looks like a monkey, and he's an adorable egg monkey. But
well, Anji says he is a monkey, so... that's totally what that is.
Flying lemur bat.
Oh, well.
What else? Okay, the people in the school, which just Avatar having a school episode is amazing, but and it's just all these caricatures are so well done, well voiced.
Well, I mean, it definitely touches on something that was never addressed before, like the fact that, you know, three teenagers are walking around doing whatever and no one says, why aren't you in school?
There isn't school, really. This is the only time we see it in the Fire Nation. Really, the Fire Nation are the only ones to
have. Yeah, well, like, this is the first time they're in disguise, and they're not on the Avatar. I don't need to be in school.
Yeah, I guess. Well, we also see a healing school in Northern Rock.
Yeah.
But yeah, the Fire Nation more advanced, more likely to have a structured school system.
I thought it was... Oh, sorry.
No, you keep going.
I just thought it was really clever how they implemented the school, because, you know, all the time you watch, because most cartoon shows, at this time especially, were geared toward, you know, well, happened in middle school or high school, and that it was just so clever of them to implement it this way.
Yeah, it's just everything about it. The specific characters, Anji, not as much of a caricature as the other ones, she's more of a plot device, but still amazing. There's the teacher whose name is apparently Miss Kwan, even though she's not named in the episode. She's great. I love her voice.
Yes, it's the perfect teacher voice.
Yeah.
And then there's the music teacher, too.
The music teacher is great, too.
Yeah, I know you'd be overwhelmed for your love for the Fire Nation.
And we have the principal, who's also amazing and well-voiced.
Yes.
He's not very smart. The fact that he fell for Sokka's disguise...
I feel like Katara's disguise was a bit more flimsy.
This whole episode is just, it's so ridiculous. That's why.
When he was wearing, like, Sokka was wearing the Fire Lord beard, and then she has, like, a pillow.
Yeah.
Yeah, basically. It's, oh my god. And their last name is Fire. That's still the best part.
Yeah.
That Fire. That says it all.
And then he explains it all in his head, though. It's like, they're from the colonies. They're all stupid there.
Yeah, that's really what it. It also shows the horribleness of the Fire Nation if they can get away with that through that answer. But
It goes back to all the usual stereotype with schools that all the teachers are stupid.
Yeah, that's true.
So,
talking about Wang Fire. Just all the Sokka. Oh yeah, one thing I want to say. This episode is so Aang centric, but it also hits on all the other characters. All the other main characters, really, in just nice little ways. We have these Sokka humor moments. We have Katara.
I loved when they were flying away, and Sokka's like, I can't take it off. It's permanently glued to my face.
Oh, no, yes. I can't. It's permanently glued to my skin.
Yeah, it's the end of the episode, pretty amazing. And we have Toph with her little moments, less so than the other ones. Even works in Momo and Appa at various points. It's just so well executed on all sides.
It's just like nothing gets left out, really.
Yeah. We have the dance. The whole last act is perfectly. We all have the friends too. Like the best friend who's cool, all the nerdy kids, with the bully, just all the stereotypes there.
Oh, you're one of the popular kids I've been hearing about.
Yeah, that's such a ridiculous line.
Loved that. He bowed to him. I'm just like, oh my god.
He was like, you must be popular.
That's such an Aang thing to do. Like,
I know.
Yeah,
it is.
My god. That's great.
Great.
When they are sort of like the only quote unquote main character we didn't see in this episode, like at least some touch on, was Ty Lee.
That's true.
But she was mentioned.
Well, yeah, she at least had mentioned.
So she was there in spirit.
Yes, that's true.
Would you agree that, because I read this fact, I don't know if you guys do the Know Your Avatar facts on .tumblr, but one of them said that this episode's based off of Footloose, that movie.
I haven't seen Footloose, but I don't, it's, so there's the beach, which is very clearly based on Breakfast Club, and the and people involved have said that. I haven't heard that from anyone, any of the crew, so...
Okay.
Maybe there are plot similarities. I haven't heard it from the crew though. I could be wrong though.
I've never seen Footloose. I just know it's about dancing. And really, you could say it's like Step Up. I mean, it just any dance.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I know my sister has seen it. She told me a little bit about it. I think it's about a town that actually outlawed dancing. So I don't know, that maybe the similarity there.
So, yeah, you can see the similarity in the plot. Maybe, okay, maybe, but yeah, like I said, just haven't seen it, heard that from a crew member, I would say. Speaking of the no dancing thing, it gives the episode some semblance of plot, while still not being much of a plot point at all, and, like, allowing the episode to be loose.
Just like, really smart filler.
Yes, and it still, like, serves a purpose. And then we get the Katango, which is the greatest... Like, I don't know what it is, 2 minutes, 1 minute, ever, in history.
It's everything.
Also, like, he dances with Anji, and Kidar's like, whatever.
Yeah, that's basically it.
Which is really the only, that's really the only true moment of Katara jealousy in the entire series. And I'm not talking about The Promise, because I don't even want to talk about that right now, but in the TV show, I believe...
And it's, like, barely even jealousy, too. Like, it's just, like...
She's just like, if that's what you'd like, which is great, throw off, I'm just gonna sit here.
Yeah. Oh, and a random moment related to that. Aang goes up to Anji and her friend and, like, sticks her hand out, and Anji blushes, and the friend, like, waves at them and smiles. I don't know. I love that moment. That just friend character that's kind of there. Her reaction's really nice, really cool.
And it's just such a dance, like, high school, middle school dance thing, you know, your friends and just, like...
Yeah, basically.
It's great.
I like the kid who, like, freaks out during the weird, like, guitar lute type solo. It's, like, flailing his arms all over the place.
Yeah, oh, and there's a gif you can find of Brian doing a reference of that. Like, he does the dance for the animators. And it's amazing.
That's amazing.
Yes, go look for that.
There's also that one guy doing the sprinkler, which is interesting, too.
Yes, that's...
Oh, and about that, the freaky disco... spaz attack guy. I feel like that, well, just on an artistic perspective, I thought that scene had the best lighting or coloring, I don't know whichever it would be. It was just, that was just because I was talking about the coloring earlier, that was like, it was really the one scene that was just so great, I thought, anyway.
Every scene is so great. I'm thinking about it.
Yeah.
Enemy birds in the beginning, I'm trying to think, we kind of skipped over the beginning. The choosing of clothes, I would say. Is really well done. And then I love how it's just you have an Aang, like, being flustered by Katara moment, but it's not, like, all awkward. It ends pretty quickly in, like, a practical way, and it's like, oh, they're dealing with this already and stuff like that.
There's the cow hippo.
Yeah, the cow hippo.
Even the meat eats the meat.
That is true. And that they have that little joke while still having Aang and his...
Go get lettuce from the garbage.
And that's such a quirky line. Like, I don't know. And they're like, oh, okay.
Just, I would have thought at least Katara would have been like, no, Aang, you can't eat lettuce from the garbage. Nope.
It's like Aang's just saying that, but still, I don't know, that just...
It's still, it gets the point across.
Yes.
Yet he never retrieves lettuce from the garbage.
Well, it's off camera, obviously. No, actually, that's not true.
I don't think Aang wanted that part to be filmed, okay? He was just like, nah.
Yeah, he really never eats, though. That's true, because we see him right after that, he walks into the school administrators.
Yeah, it would have been great if they just, like, cut the scene and had him, like, huddling in a corner eating lettuce, and then the school administrator people walk up. Like, that would have been spectacular.
Why are you eating lettuce?
That scene in Seinfeld eats the eclair from the garbage.
No one? Avatar doing Seinfeld, yeah, that would totally happen.
Yeah, totally works.
Yes. So we have the end, and then we have Katara kissing Aang on the cheek, and we have Sokka being awesome with the permanently glued to my face.
Sokka.
Flameo. Yeah. And instead of Oogies, he says Flameo.
Yeah. Yeah.
Flameo, sir.
She just crossed
out.
And
the slow clap.
Yeah, we just... Okay, so we went through the whole episode. Basically, it's perfect, is what I'm trying to say. Oh, we have hide and explode. I forgot about that. No. Nobody, Hide, nobody shows my Anji anything, especially in movements. That's got to be a top five line in Avatar.
Yes.
I don't know. Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
It's like they got so overprotective to the point, like, you don't understand why they're together.
Well, you don't
why
understand.
Why didn't he firebend?
Because he's not
He did it that one time, and then he's just like, I'm just going to try and punch this guy instead of using the firebending I clearly have.
Yeah.
I've never thought about that.
It's such a showcase. Like, that fight is such a good showcase of Aang's character there, too. She's like, I'm just going to let you do your thing and not attack you at all.
Yeah, exactly.
Can I say something about the Katango real quick?
Yes, more.
Just because,
you are always,
no,
everyone's
of course
always
it's
allowed
amazing.
To say
what?
Anything. Sorry. Everyone's always allowed to say anything about the Katango at all moments.
Well, of course it's amazing and beautiful and feels, but just one thing I'd like to point out as a martial artist is that it's really, this is cool. It's just really, I didn't mean to just blow you off. I just want to finish my thought. It's just this wonderful showcase of how martial arts is an art form, because it is. I mean, that's why it's called martial art and not like martial attack. I don't know. But it just,
martial awesomeness.
Exactly. Yeah. And it just, that's like watching that scene. I just love to watch that scene because, yeah. I mean, it just is such, because that's what, you know, they're doing their bending forms. It just really showcases the beauty of martial arts with, and of course, we tend to lose that when we're watching the action and them bending the elements.
I don't know if the whole thing was bending, because I think that's what he whispered to start it off with, is do whatever water bending form, but then I think in the end they were just kind of freestyling it.
It was I'm just saying, it was, for me, like the majority of it was definitely bending, and I really feel, of course, part in the whole flip out, that was totally dance, but like the flipping and the jumping and the kicking.
Sure.
But yeah, towards the end they were just trying to like have their hands all over each other, but... Which, of course, is fine. I don't have any complaints.
Totally fine.
I do.
Yeah, the other... sorry.
Of course you do, Colin. You can continue,
Aang. I'm trying to find what this is... okay, the dance that they do is based on Bagua Zhang and Northern Jialin. And... Okay, yeah. There you go. Because it was based on a thing.
Yeah, also the scene we were talking about earlier, the Aang avoiding the bully... was, I'm trying to think, I feel like I remember a martial art that was based off of, but it's quite, some of the moves he do are quite similar to Aikido, which is a Japanese martial art.
Was the form the samurai use?
Yes, it was. I don't know that because I take it. But I just thought that was a cool little factoid to throw out, that it looked quite similar.
Nice.
And it's also, I'm sorry, you can...
No, I'm done. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, it's that with that scene also is that they're really showing the purpose of martial arts, which is not to injure, it's not to, well, it's, well, of course, it's different with Kung Fu, and I take karate, but you're talking about how you just, you're using your opponent's momentum and force against them.
Yeah, and it like, just showcases the entire airbender style, like, martial arts style, and, like, thought about, you know, violence and physical combat.
Yeah, and
Yeah.
But I'm just saying, it just, to me, it just shows the purpose. And of course, if you don't really take martial arts, you wouldn't necessarily pick up on that, but just the purpose of martial art, and like, it's not to necessarily injure someone.
Yeah, I do it myself. Get the fight over. It's not about, let's just call, you know, it's not about, I'm going to put you in as much pain as I can for my own amusement. It's just, I don't want to be in a fight. Let's get this over with.
Yeah. Unless you're doing Krav Maga, in which case, it is.
Game over.
Rip your opponent limb from limb.
So we talked about positives a lot. Anybody have any negatives that we haven't talked about?
The Katanga.
I hate this entire episode.
Okay, seriously though. Colin, do you have any negatives?
No. I mean, no, I'm good.
Well, apparently it's perfect, which it is. Okay. Let's grade the episode, because why not? Start with Delaney. Out of 10.
Okay, I want to give it a 10. Really, really bad, but I probably shouldn't. So I'm just going to go 9.8. Just in comparison to all the other Avatar episodes. And this episode is my favorite, in case I didn't get that across well enough. It is my favorite episode. And, yep, 9.8.
Ari?
I'm going to say 9.73. Because it is a very, very good episode. And I guess the only flaws were it started off a little bit slow with Zuko. He just sort of got out of bed, and for like the first minute it was pretty much him walking up to a guard tower, and then walking away. And that's really the only flaw I can think of. And, you know, I mean, like you said, it was a little bit fast-paced, kind of quirky, but overall an incredible episode. So, yeah, 9.73.
Colin?
I'm going to have to say 9. I mean, it's a great episode. I love it. It's probably the best, and it's one of the best in the series. But I just feel, yeah, Zutara for the win.
Okay, then. Philip?
I'd have to agree with the 9. I think it's an amazing episode and develops the characters a lot, but I don't think it develops the plot much at all.
Okay. And this episode gets a perfect end for me, actually. One of 4 episodes in Avatar that I give a perfect end to, the others being Season 1 Finale, 120, City Walls and Secrets, and... Ooh, what's the other one?
Blind Bandit!
No, not the Blind Bandit.
Can I change mine to a 10? I didn't want to be the one person to give it a 10, so I'm changing it to a 10.
You say Siege of the North?
Yeah, Siege of the North Part 2.
Tales of Ba Sing Se, because tribute to Mako?
No, definitely not. I think it might be Crossroads. Do I have Crossroads at 3? I think I might have Crossroads at 3. Okay, so then if then, Crossroads gets a 10 too. Okay. But yeah, it's perfect. There was like 2 flaws I had with it previously, and both are not flaws anymore, so...
Just it is perfect
flawless,
in every way.
Flawless in every way. Okay, I've been your main host, Dylan. Mini hosts have been Delaney, Ari, Philip, and Colin. Dong Fen is owned by Jake. I don't know what else I'm supposed to say for Minicast 1. I don't think anything. So, yeah, this is that bad. Hopefully we'll do some more episodes, but this is the one I definitely wanted to do.
This is the best.
It is the best. Final thoughts?
How do you think you play Hide and Explode? I'm very curious.
It sounds awesome, and I want to play it.
And it sounds like you have to be a firebender, unless there's like, I don't know, like the exploding snaps, like in Harry Potter, they have something like that.
Wait, what is this?
What?
Hide and Explode.
The Aang's friend character says you want to come play Hide and Explode with us after his fight.
Oh,
and I wonder what that would be. I would assume it's just like Hide and Seek, but Fire Nation name.
No, it's got to be more awesome. Yeah, right?
It is also the origin for Flameo Instant Noodles.
This is true, this episode, yeah.
Greatest Gumbin.
I remember just freaking out when I heard that, their little radio ad. I was like, oh my god.
Pretty amazing. Oh my goodness. Huge props to John O'Brien for this episode. This is
just all the Katang.
One of the main reasons why I defend him all the time.
Bring back the Flameo.
Like, this makes up for the Great Divide and then some. That's how good it is. But anyway, what do you guys want to... what was it?
What?
Was that Delaney, who I interrupted?
What? I was just Katang yelling and being ridiculous. We can end on Katang, but Colin will probably have an issue with this.
Flameo.
How about Flameo Hotman?
Whatever you want to end on, any combination of those. Okay. Thanks for listening, guys. 1, 2, 3. Flameo.
Flameo Hotman.
Flameo Hotman.
Stay flaming.
Hello and welcome to From the Spirit World, a legendary Avatar The Last Airbender and The Legend of Korra podcast for DongBuFang.net. If you want extensive in-depth discussion on Korra from longtime knowledgeable fans of Avatar and longtime fandom members, then this is the podcast for you. I'm your main host, Dylan, and today I'm joined by mini-host Delaney.
Hello.
Colin.
Hello.
Philip.
Hello.
Ari.
Hello.
And James.
Greetings.
And James is Omega Little Bob. I assume it's pronounced on the DF forums. And everyone else, you already know their forum screen names. Today we'll be discussing Harry Potter and Harry Potter comparisons between Avatar. I guess this comes from our Doctor Who comparison minicast, which I assume will have aired by now, even though I don't really know the order. So obviously, pretty much everyone's a Harry Potter fan. So I guess us specifically on this one are too.
Absolutely.
Yes.
See,
we should play the Hedwig theme over this, definitely.
Other than Avatar music, I guess, which I technically steal. I try not to steal too much music for the podcast. But anyway.
I can hum it really well.
Yes, hum it while we are talking. Dope. I guess we're going to talk about like character comparisons and not a plot comparisons. I mean, just in general, the two are really trope-based, which is like all stories are. But they're both kind of like stereotypical fantasy stories, so of course they're going to share a lot of similar themes and such. This is a minicast, blah, blah, blah. You can email us at dylan@dongbufang.net and post on the forums at dongbufang.net/forums, as you can post your comparisons to ones that we might not get. And I should say that Delaney has outlined this podcast and we'll be making a lot of points. And let's get right into it. Delaney, why don't you talk about the first comparison, I guess?
Well, it's a really obvious comparison that you can really draw to anything, but any fantasy, because as you said, it's very stereotypical, but we have, in the first season, it's really just the first season, and it's, you have the two guys and one girl, because you have, you know, Ron and Harry and Hermione, and you have Aang, Sokka, and Katara, and of course, more on that is that the girl is really the driving force, because, everyone would be dead without Katara and Hermione. Of course, more so Hermione, but Katara really is. Of course, she's our. I refer to her as our narrator because she does do our intro for the Avatar, and of course, Katara also is a healer, and Hermione also with her essence of Dittany and her just being amazing with her spell casting and whatnot. Mm-hmm. So, there's a lot of, especially with Katara, the comparison between Katara and Hermione, not only as the main female characters, but as with their role in the group. Because really, Katara is the one who pushes Sokka to go after Aang. And also, Hermione, she, like, with the Dumbledore's army.
Mm-hmm.
So specifically, she pushes Harry to do it. Well, she really just drags him and makes him do it, but same difference. Which is really how Katara does things. So.
Oh, yeah, I guess I should say, I forgot to say this, we're going to possibly spoilers for all the books. So
if you haven't read the books by now, I'm sorry, that's just sad.
At least seen the movies.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. And if you haven't, why are you listening to this cast?
Well, yeah. I don't know.
The Harry Potter comparisons cast. I listened to read Harry Potter, but I'm sure I'll figure it out.
Yeah. Sorry if we spoil the seventh book, but if you already don't have spoilers because of the internet, I don't know. You've just been a lucky soul.
Spoilers. Dumbledore dies.
Oh, see, that's what we're talking about. But yeah, that was, I remember.
Not even really that one, really the last book, but.
Then the sixth book came out, that was hilarious on the internet. Anyway,
it's still hilarious.
I guess, when I think of a comparison between Katara and someone in Harry Potter, I tend more towards Ginny. But I definitely understand what you're saying. Like, with the desert, that's like the stereotypical everyone leans on Katara episode.
Really?
Well, Katara also fills two roles as both like the driving force and the love interest, whereas that's split apart into two separate characters.
Yeah, that's true. But also, I think in general, more of just like the tough, Ginny is more of
scary as crap.
Yeah, Ginny more you'd associate with the spell casting and the fighting, probably more so than Hermione, which is what Katara, a big aspect of her is.
Well, I was talking about, Hermione isn't as combative, yeah, but she does have the most, most knowledge.
Also towards the beginning, they're kind of the only ones who want to be the hero. Like Harry's just kind of like, oh, I'm a wizard, this is cool. I'm not sure if I want to be the hero. But, and same with Aang, he just wants to, hang around and have fun and go surf on a strange, penguin. Yes.
Otter penguin.
Penguin sledding. That's it. Let's go penguin sledding.
Oh, I was talking about the giant fish. Sorry.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Fish.
That too.
And then Hermione, running off to the library and dragging everyone into everything.
And then Sokka goes to the library.
Sokka is a lot like Hermione.
Vacation at the library!
I think if you were going to pinpoint a stereotypical tropey part of Hermione, you would say she's the nerdy girl, the lovable nerdy girl. Which the closest Avatar Korra analog is Jinora.
Yeah.
So that's something that we don't really get in Katara, I would say.
Well, we also, just the aspects of Hermione we do see in Sokka the cleverness. Even though Hermione's tend to work more often, but.
Yeah, that's true. So it's not like a perfect comparison, but there are a few that can be made.
Well, just the main point was that we have these two very strong, independent main female characters.
Okay. Yes. Continue with the bullet point.
Next one? Or?
No, the physical markings. I don't think we got into that, did we?
Okay. The physical markings of the heroes. Aang clearly his tattoos. Of course, everyone, even if you haven't watched Avatar, you know he's the kid with the arrows. Very distinguishing, and of course, everyone identifies him with his arrows. The same with Harry. From when he was, everyone knew about his scar before he
knew about it.
Yeah, before he was two, and you have the lightning scar and the tattoos, and it's just so obvious. Harry can kind of hide his, of course, Aang does manage to hide his as well, but they're just very obvious.
Mm-hmm.
And they identify him as, because all of the characters in all of the series, in both series, I don't even know, it's the same thing. Everyone identifies both characters with their physical markings. Because no one else has Air Nomad tattoos, and no one else has a lightning scar.
This is almost assuredly a trope. I'm not aware of it being a specific one, but it'd probably be something like identification of the chosen one or something like that.
And with Zuko too, with the parallel story, with his more obvious scar. Because really, Zuko and Aang are opposites until they merge into the same path, but.
As the Awakening tries to show us in a side-by-side comparison.
Yes, and so we can compare Zuko also to Harry, which of course is a stronger comparison because they're both scars, and they're given by the main evil characters.
This is true. That's interesting.
Zuko can't hide his with bangs, though.
No. They'd have to be some real serious bangs.
Yeah.
We're talking Tano hair, okay? real hard attempt.
So beyond the scar, I guess. Okay, let's get into Zuko more, though. So now we're talking about that. So the next bullet point, I guess.
With Snape?
Yeah, sure. It's a good time to get into that.
So everyone. Oh, well, I guess we're about to get into spoiler territory, which really at this point is just terrible. Okay, spoiler warning right now. Stop if you have not read the last book, or if you've just been hiding under a rock. Snape is good, guys. Yay!
Woohoo!
Yay!
So, he's the real hero.
He's a good guy. But he's only a good guy because he likes Harry's mom, which is kind of weird.
Yeah.
It's not just like. He loves her.
This is kind of the debate that Mina and Mel were having. Sorry, this is referring to something that you guys didn't hear. But yeah, it's basically Mina saying he's not good. He's just obsessively in love with Lily. And so it's like, yeah. That's the argument. Anyway, continue.
You say, I guess Zuko's in love with Aang? I don't know.
Clearly.
That's okay.
Haven't you read the fanfics?
That's definitely what's going on. But when I was Zuko, he starts off, he's the main villain. Like, because we know Ozai, well, really we don't really know Ozai exists for really a long time. That, like, he's just this far-off kind of guy. And, ooh, brainwave. We can also compare Zuko to Draco Malfoy. Because Voldemort's far away, but the immediate villain is Draco. Well, villain. Draco's not really a villain. Of course, we could argue about that for days.
Yeah.
Well, in that, well, Zuko also could also be considered a rival, too. Because he doesn't try to kill Aang. He just tries to capture him in a net thing. I don't know.
Zuko's more of a direct antagonist to Aang, where Draco is just kind of like this side annoyance.
Well, it's just because Draco's really lame, but like, but back to Zuko and Snape. So Zuko starts off, and of course Zuko struggles more with himself than Snape. But of course, we don't really see Snape struggling because throughout the entire books, at the end we realize that he must have been good all along. But he only had been bad before the events in the books happened. So, of course, there probably was some struggle with his love for Lily, but that's the main difference, is Zuko struggled more, and we got to see more of that as he struggled with his thoughts on what was right and what was wrong, and, of course... So I guess here we go. They're both very focused on one thing. Zuko, his honor... And Snape, his love for Lily.
That's a good point.
They're both very driven by, of course, Snape can be, we admire Snape for his love for Lily. We mock Zuko for his obsession with his honor.
Honor!
I think really in the simplest terms, they're both characters who you're really not sure where their loyalties lie. They follow really similar arcs where you're unsure, and then there's this moment where they turn bad, and you're convinced they're bad, and then but then despite that, they switch at the end in like the last seasons, in the last season of Avatar, the last book. Yeah. Whereas Snape kills Gumbledore, and Zuko
Crossroads of Destiny.
Yes, it's a very stereotypical. I'm not sure what the trope is, but this is also definitely a fantasy trope of the character you're not, the like anti-hero you don't know where his loyalties lie, basically.
And they both are related to the deaths of another character.
This is true, yes.
Yeah. Of course, with Aang, and then with... spoiler, Dumbledore!
Yeah. Except I already spoiled that. But random insert here. Aang and Harry both have the fantasy hero's death come back to life thing.
In relation to Christ, his death and resurrection thing.
Yeah.
That, relating that to Christ.
Just... Ooh, this is reminding me of... other comparisons. I feel like I was going to have this podcast at some point, so hopefully I'll remember stuff. Okay. Other Snape Zuko. I think Zuko is a mix between Malfoy and Snape, because he's like more of the character's age. He's less of, and he's more of a peer. I would say Draco is and I would be more willing to call him like a villain, because he's like directly involved in bad things a lot. Directly in the way of Harry, like the Zuko's directly in the way, but yet there's still a force outside. And I know, Delaney, you made the point of like this off-screen villain for a while. So maybe Snape's kind of Snape in the first book's probably kind of like Zhao in a way, in that he's the direct presence, that the direct threat, and then you have Ozai and Voldemort lurking on the outside.
Yeah. Of course, we get the yes.
No, you can continue.
Well, I was just going to say that, of course, we get to see the villain much quicker in, I would say, Harry Potter, because by the end, well, really closer to the end, we see the villain comes.
Yeah, so we see Voldemort in book 4, so...
Well, I meant, like, he went Voldemort's presence, just, like, with Quirrell.
Yeah,
I just spoiled Philosopher's Stone, I'm sorry.
In the book 1,
he speaks.
Yeah, I think... It's not exactly the same, but you can make the comparison that Ozai and Voldemort's presence are both felt until 301 and at the end of book 4, respectively. Or not respectively.
Oh, yeah. Definitely when we feel, like, how much of a threat they are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And because really I would compare it to Ozai and when he becomes the Phoenix King, and then Voldemort, I would feel more of when he comes out of the cauldron. Like that moment where you're like, oh crap.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Everything is suddenly terrible.
Yeah.
I mean, really, you could say Voldemort, like, after as well, because Voldemort is just. And another thing, it might be too early, but that both of these villains we see are truly the incarnate of evil.
Mm.
There isn't really any halfway. Of course, Harry does see he does pity Voldemort, and he wants him to feel remorse. Of course, Voldemort doesn't. But it's just that they're both just so entirely evil.
It's interesting.
Of course, it's a trope. They're just the entirely. Of course, Voldemort's not entirely one-dimensional, but you know what I mean? Just the...
Yeah, he's not like, oh, well, I might be good sometimes. He's going to be evil for forever.
Let's compare this back to Doctor Who, the Daleks. Anyway, it's interesting. On one hand, Voldemort seems more human because we get to see more of his backstory in Harry Potter than we get to see of Ozai's in Avatar. That's just maybe because the books have more details. At the same time, I would be more willing to say that Ozai is not pure evil than I would about Voldemort.
Yeah.
Well, because we do see Ozai. We don't see Ozai specifically, but his forefathers and how that impacted him.
Yeah, I feel like Ozai was sort of pushed into his situation, whereas Voldemort chose.
Well, Voldemort was also. I mean, you're right that Ozai was definitely more pushed more. I don't know. He was definitely. There really was nowhere else Ozai could go.
Yeah, you can't just.
You can't really be like, oh yeah, screw you, Dad. I'm just gonna mess up your entire empire here.
Especially
and
given how he came to power.
Yeah.
Or how we assume he came to power. I don't know if that's.
Yeah.
Canon or whatever.
I think we can assume.
I didn't want to get the crazy attack iTunes review. I don't.
they won't attack you for that. It'll be for much more dumb things. Anyway, I'm trying to read the rest of this bullet point. It's interesting. Okay, talk about the individual group thing.
And it's really vague in the outline. I apologize because I write weirdly. So I was talking about there's these groups and it's really, I feel like it's strongly, it's more strong, I don't know, okay. You feel it more in Avatar. Of course, we kind of mock it. These groups that we don't see them as individuals. They're just an entire group, and all of them are evil. There's no middle ground. They're all evil. And in Avatar, we have the Firebenders and the entire Fire Nation. But we do see it more with Firebenders because they're always the villains. And we see this in Korra Mako and Bolin's parents, and then Asami's mom.
There's one Firebender that's killing everyone, yeah, basically.
Yes.
Yeah, and then Amon.
Who is this Firebender?
Backstory.
He's the Joker. Spoiler alert.
No.
Yes.
Okay, here's a question. Who do you think appears as more human and less all-encompassing evil? The Firebenders or the Slytherins?
Firebenders.
Yeah,
Firebenders. Because we see the Firebenders just kind of being normal, like, during the headband, which we just did a minicast for. You just see them kind of normally going about their day, and, you know, they're not, you can see they're not all evil, whereas we only ever see Slytherin being terrible, and, like, in some of the books, they're like, nope, instead of following your rules, we're going to go team up with Voldemort.
And we see more, we have more firebending characters to relate to,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to really, the only we know, like, we barely know any Slytherin's names. And the only Slytherins we know that are good are dead.
Yeah, yeah. I think this is actually a flaw with Harry Potter. I don't know why she wrote the Slytherins so unsympathetically. I don't know.
But then at the end, she kind of almost sort of redeems Drake. I don't know, not really, but
especially
she tries.
For like a house that the main character was almost in, they're very evil.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Well, I guess she felt that since... The choice, I guess that kind of... No, not really. Okay, you're right. Yeah, bad. Especially since Voldemort was a Slytherin. Like, that really doesn't help at all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, Voldemort was a Slytherin, so everyone else in Slytherin must love him.
And all of the Slytherin's parents... I mean, not all of them. Like, a lot of them, though, are Death Eaters.
Mm.
And that's another group, the Death Eaters. That, of course, they all are evil. I cannot talk.
Colin?
Well, I mean, did you say the point that, like, just because Voldemort was in Slytherin, therefore Slytherin's bad? That was your point, right?
Well, no, that was like, what we would infer from it. That's, we were talking about how it's a flaw.
Oh.
Like, Dylan brought up. I mean, because I'm not, like, I don't think that, but, and I don't think anyone here does think that, and if you do, okay. Good for you. I'm happy.
Well,
okay.
Don't we know a couple of good Slytherins? Like, wasn't one of the prefects for Gryffindor's girlfriend a Slytherin or something?
No, she
something really minor.
Clearwater, I can't even think of her first name.
Penelope.
Yeah, Penelope Clearwater, Percy's girlfriend. She was in Ravenclaw.
Okay.
That's not Slytherin, though.
Yeah, that's what you're talking about. He thought, I was just saying, I'm pretty sure, unless you're talking about someone else that I can't think of.
I think there's someone else who, like, there was some kind of very minor love interest thing, but it wasn't very relevant at all.
Really obscure Harry Potter trivia, yay.
Yeah, we pretty much know of, like, four or five Slytherins. Draco, Crabbe, Goyle, and
Millicent
Pansy. Yeah, and Millicent. So that's five.
They even have evil names.
Yeah.
Who names their son
Crabbe? Honestly.
Someone who really hates their child.
Okay, yeah. This is off topic.
That's his last name.
Yeah,
his last name is Crabbe. Okay.
Anyway, let's get into...
Before we move to the next bullet point, I had a thought.
Okay.
As
there's, like, the, kind of a guiding group. Like, there's the Order of the Phoenix and the Order of the White Lotus that isn't...
Yes.
It's more presently known the Order of the Phoenix is than the White Lotus, but they're kind of fighting the secret war, almost.
Mm.
That is a very good point. I'm sure that's also a TV trope. We could finally look that up.
Probably.
It needs Sam.
Yes, Queen of Tropes.
Yes. James, then Colin.
Yes. I was going to say, you know, with almost all the Slytherins and Death Eaters are portrayed as, like, being, like, purely evil. In Avatar, it's like they almost go out of their way they don't go out of their way, but they show that, you know, you have the Dai Li to show how, you know, you can have evil with the earthbenders, and then you have the Puppet Master to show how, you know, a waterbender, you know, who's, like, the direct opposite of a firebender can also be evil. So it's kind of like evil comes from all sources, not just the Fire Nation. I think that's one strength that Avatar really has.
Yeah, definitely.
Oh, definitely. And we don't really see that too much with Harry. Well, we do see, okay, in Harry Potter, what we see is instead of the houses, we see like the pure blood and the half blood and the muggle born, because we see the Weasleys, who are labeled blood traitors.
So
it's like that. Of course, I would say it's more obvious and there in Avatar, but Harry Potter does have that.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Colin?
I was going to move on to the next point, mentor figure.
Okay, let's get into mentor figure then.
Okay, thinking about it, I just think, like, well, hear me out, but, like, kind of like Iroh's kind of like the same figure. Oh, not necessarily the same exact figure, but kind of like Sirius Black. Like, you think he's bad. Everyone thinks he's bad. He's some, like, murderous person, because he used to be the general of the Fire Nation army. And then just, like, he ends up being good. He doesn't, like, directly, like, he's not, like, the exact mentor, like, to Aang. I mean, he does give Aang advice, and he does help Zuko tremendously, and then he helps all the other people in the finale. But, I mean, he gives also, like, huge wisdom and advice to everyone, just like Sirius did, I guess. But more of, like, Grogu's the more of the Dumbledore figure, I believe. I don't know.
Well, I would think, personality-wise, Iroh is more of a... there is a thread on the forums that everyone needs to look at by Mindbender, but I cannot think of name for the life of me. But about the mentors. And I would just say, personality-wise, Iroh is... And why I said the forum, my thoughts are all written out there. But Iroh... because, like, Iroh's obsession with tea. Dumbledore's obsession with sweets.
Yeah, I mean, like, Iroh may have the more violent past, but he's definitely the more compassionate figure. And he's a lot more relatable. Like, Grogu just shows up to be like, I'm the Avatar, rah, do what I say. Or occasionally he shows up to give wisdom, but a lot of what he does is just going through Aang to give power. And that's not really something Iroh or Dumbledore do.
Well, Dumbledore is extremely manipulative.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very secretive.
Now, I wouldn't say Roku is, like, no one is as manipulative as Dumbledore. He's just, no one. It's just Dumbledore is the master. But I would definitely say Roku, in that regard, with the secrets, because Roku does keep a lot of secrets. and like he does reveal most of them at a certain point, but he waits, just like Dumbledore does, for a very, either because of his, I wouldn't say love, because, well, Dumbledore does, but Roku, because why would you love yourself, awkward, himself, but, so definitely, like, and, like, he waits, the perfect moment, either to protect himself, or Aang, I don't know, so confusing with these reincarnations, but, so, Dumbledore, they both do, and they are very, both are very secretive, and they do choose their moments and their words very carefully.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I think it's definitely difficult to pick out one character in between the two that's like exactly the same, because, you know, no two characters are written exactly the same. They have different character traits, so you can't really pick any one that's the same.
Also, mentors tend to share the same qualities. If that makes, so, like, yeah. You can't, so it's not like one character is going to have all the qualities of the perfect mentor, because everyone, almost, a good character is flawed. And Dumbledore is certainly flawed. And, oh, another thing I'm going to bring up real quick before I forget. Roku and Dumbledore both help the protagonist mainly out of guilt, because their actions are the reason the main character struggles.
Very true.
If Roku had killed Sozin, Aang, we wouldn't have, Aang's people wouldn't be dead. If Dumbledore had been more, if Dumbledore maybe hadn't had the cloak, of course we don't know for sure that he had the cloak at the time, but, well, before he died, he did. Or if Dumbledore had just, had killed Tom Riddle when he first suspected it.
Or if he'd stopped, it was fairly obvious within Tom's second or third year that he was not going to turn out good. And if he had just expelled him permanently from the school, that certainly would have done a significant amount, because he never would have learned about Horcruxes, which...
Well, I think you would have found a way.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that expelling him would have done...
worse.
I mean, it certainly would have done something, and it might have... was. What's going on? Someone's mic. Is everything okay?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. Well, I don't think he would have been able to get to another school, but, you know, he had that much potential, so I'm sure he would have worked something out.
He certainly could have gone to Durmstrang. I thought he almost did.
Yeah, he almost did.
Somewhat
yeah.
off topic.
Sorry.
But yeah.
What I wanted to say was that that was a big similarity between Roku and Dumbledore, that their actions, or lack thereof, caused the conflicts that we see in Avatar and Harry and the books of Harry Potter.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Continue.
No, you go ahead.
No, go ahead, though.
No, I'm about to make an off-topic point, so go ahead.
Ari, just say thanks.
You continue. It's Ari, but
okay.
I insist, Dylan, you continue.
Okay, so random points I thought of. Avatar and Harry Potter, both unexplained magic, as kind of their backbone of the show. It's like fantastical magic. Some shows try to explain their magic. These definitely don't. And another thing...
Well, Avatar explains it a little bit.
A little bit. Like, but it's
definitely not, like, sufficiently.
You really infer that the chi moved on to the elements. You just kind of...
Yeah, it's okay. A little bit explained. But I guess the other point is that non-benders and muggles.
Yeah.
Yeah, basically. And then the persecution... so that relates to Korra.
Yes, definitely.
So it's a lot more open. Like, in Avatar, it's like, oh, he's a bender. I know what that is. When it's like, he's a wizard? Oh, no, let's get someone to come and wipe your mind so you forget about that completely.
Yeah, it's not like a secret society. Bending, it's out in the open.
And non-benders have a way, they find a way to combat benders. Well, of course, in the early days, they burned witches and wizards, but they didn't really know what they were doing, and a lot more other people got injured, well, killed. And really, muggles have no defense.
Yeah.
Of course, that could also be considered a flaw, that wizards are so powerful, which is why other wizards have to protect them from wizards like Voldemort.
Yeah, I mean, in the original series, though, we don't really see much... we do see some non-benders protecting themselves from benders, but other than, like, Sokka and a few of those,
and Ty Lee.
Other, yeah, and Ty Lee and Mei, you know, but other than the real elite warriors, we see most of the rest of them pretty much wiped out. Not physically, like, killed, but destroyed by benders in any type of combat.
Lots of blades getting cut off of the tops of spears.
Yeah. No, you don't. But, I mean, in Korra, it's definitely different because you have the equalist movement, but...
Okay, let's do the next bullet point because we're running a little bit long. Which one should we go to next?
Death of the Mentor.
No, we kind of covered that.
The growing up story, but that's really kind of self-explanatory.
Yeah, them finding out they're the Chosen One. Yeah. I mean, they're both the Chosen One.
And well, and the adjusting, I guess, it is important to point out that Harry found out, like, he finds out he's a wizard, and there's this whole new world. And then Aang wakes up 100 years later. And as as was said in the headband cast, which I don't know what order this is going in, but talk about, you know, the culture shock.
Yeah, that's true.
And Flameo. Of course,
yes. So, love interest, unless there are other thoughts.
Let's get into this here one. This one's interesting.
Well, this is kind of the product of reading too much fan fiction, but I've always thought this, that Ron may be Harry's best mate, but Hermione and Harry are the best of friends. Like, that is such... To me, that is what a friendship should be.
Hmm.
And... Yes?
No, I was just going to say, I'd never thought about that before I saw that before I saw your post. And it's one of the reasons why I really enjoy the first part of the Deathly Hallows, the movie, is because they really show that just pure friendship between Harry and Hermione, where it's like, it's not romantic. What? you don't like the dancing, Dylan?
No, I'm such a hardcore Harry Jipper. Anything that goes against
mainly it. Bonnie Wright, just anything with Bonnie.
That's
Wright.
That's what makes it so beautiful because it's not romantic. It's friends.
The way people interpret it, though. But yeah, I agree.
Well, that's the problem. That's their problem.
Yeah, that's their problem.
Because if they hadn't been shipping Ron and Hermione from the beginning, there's something wrong with them.
Yes, insult half of the Harry Potter fandom.
Okay, to be honest though. I watched the movies before I read the books, and from the movies, I thought from the first two movies that it was going to be Harry and Hermione, okay?
Yeah, I think a lot of people thought that.
First two movies, anyway, not books. I didn't read the books until the fifth movie. Oh, but
shame on you.
I know, right?
Tisk, tisk.
But it's all right
until
now.
Until Ginny and Harry got into it, I was fully expecting Harry to be like, oh yeah, she's hot. Let's make that happen. I'm the chosen one.
I mean, but in the first... In the second book, which is when Ginny first shows up, she has a little cameo in the first, but...
First book, yeah.
Yeah, she doesn't appear very often, though. But Harry sort of sees her as, like, a little sibling, I guess. Because
he's 12 and she's 12.
Yeah, I know, but, I mean, there's still, it's only a one-year difference, and we start seeing them...
Yeah.
In the fifth book, I mean, she's 14, he's 15. It's still only a one-year difference, but I don't know.
No.
I guess my point sort of fell apart there.
I knew from the beginning, anyway.
Dylan.
I do, because this is the best ship ever. And Ginny was crushing on him in the second book, anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Spilled her ship.
I thought Katang was the best ship ever.
I have major ships. Harry Ginny is one of my major ships with Katang. But yes, Katang is the best ship ever.
Well, Avatar and Harry Potter exist on two different planes because they're both so amazing.
No, Avatar is superior because this is an Avatar podcast. So,
remain silent on my true views, but I will just move on to the next point.
Yes, let's move on to the next point.
Well, not the next bullet point, but I was talking about the next part of this, the Katara and Aang thing.
Yes.
That Katara, because we didn't really talk about Aang and Katara at all, which is surprising. Katara, she is the love interest, but she also serves as what Hermione serves for Harry as the rock. Aang is always going to Katara for advice. And, like, he really values her opinion, and when Aang is struggling with himself, Katara is the one who picks up the pieces.
She's and, also, yeah. Oh, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say that's what Hermione does for Harry. Like, Hermione is, like, really, of course we always joke that without Hermione, Harry and Ron would be dead. But Hermione really, she does pick up the pieces for Harry, and a lot of times if Hermione hadn't been there, Harry would have just, there wouldn't have been, like, he just would have fallen apart.
you were saying she sort of picks up the pieces for him. I don't know if this is a direct comparison, but Katara is the only one we see actually pulling Aang out of the Avatar state, which for him is sort of when he's at his weakest. He's sort of, like, he's lost control. There's something seriously wrong, and Katara always seems to sort of mend that for him. So,
well. Ignore my distraction in the chat. Anyway, yeah. It's
after said distraction, yeah. Okay.
Yes. So let's get into, there's a bullet point here. I don't know if we're kind of talking about the undercurrent of love. We're kind of talking about it already, but how do you, there's, I don't think the ships compare directly. This is
No, definitely not.
Yeah.
But just the undercurrent. Of course, the main theme in Harry Potter is love. So.
Well.
There's that.
I mean, it's also a lot less ambiguous. Like, since episode one, it's these two are obviously shipped together. This is what's going down. But it wasn't really obvious what the main ships were going to be for Harry Potter until a couple books in.
Well, of course, that's part of the growing up, though.
And it's also because it's a 7-year time period versus a little, like, 10-month time period, so.
It's different with Aang and Katara because, first, it's a different sort of world where the girls in the Water Tribe get married at 16, and Katara happens to be 14, so it's a bit different. And then, well, is it okay if I make a point, or does other people want to jump in, or?
Continue.
Keep talking.
Okay, so with the undercurrent of love, what I was trying to get at, if I could find the point that I was okay. So, as I said, of Harry Potter, it's painfully obvious just how much love is the central theme of Harry Potter. Now, it's not as obvious with, like, just the love, necessarily, that it's the theme, but we know that as Mike and Brian have said, well, I don't know if it's one of them, but how Katang is the DNA of the show, and yes, Zatarian just starts screaming at me, I don't care, they said this. So, and you can look at almost any moment in the show, and you might just infer it, but in a lot of the episodes, it's painfully obvious, the connection between Aang and Katara.
Okay, go back, rewind. Explain for a minute why the love is so obviously the main theme of Harry Potter.
Well, first off, Aang was... Aang, what the crap am I talking about? Okay, Harry...
Yes, we have succeeded in merging the shows.
they're the same. Okay, so Harry, first off, his mother saves him with her love. Her love was his shield, which saved him. And then, as we go through, Harry, well, he struggles with the abandonment, and the lack of love. And then he finds the Weasleys, who sort of adopt him, and that's the familial love coming in. And then, of course, there's the romantic love in Ginny, and the Ron and Hermione fiasco that's amazing, but fiasco. And then, at the end, the reason Harry can defeat Voldemort, and I feel like they touched it, it came out obviously in the movie because they said it, but in the book, you notice because, so, we have, okay, bad, there, never mind, I'm just gonna not even talk about that.
In Harry Potter, it's... the theme is kind of like love is sacrificing yourself.
That, and it love always triumphs over evil.
Yes.
It's not. It's good, because love is inherently good. Yes, okay, yeah, I would say, yeah, it's inherently good. But, good versus evil, but what we see, it's not just evil, it's hatred, pure hatred, and we have love as the counter. With Harry, and I almost said Aang again, Harry in the forest... That's what gave him the power to go in and have... Oh, spoiler, Harry dies. Although I think we already said that.
Yeah, we did already say that.
So, Harry, when he goes into the forest, that's what gives him, with all of his family members who are dead, and friends, who come, and they give him the strength to go and sacrifice himself. Harry wouldn't have been able to do that without their love, the pushing him on, because that's why he did it. He did and also, I feel like this is my biggest point, possibly, or one of the big three. Harry, and now they didn't show this in the movie, which ticked me off. when Harry died, his sacrifice saved everyone at the Battle of Hogwarts. Everyone. That's why Voldemort's spells didn't work on the crowd. Because his sacrifice, it was like the shield his mother gave him. It gave everyone there. Because he wasn't just doing it for him and Ron and Hermione or for Dumbledore.
For school.
Everyone. The entire wizarding world, in fact. Of course, it didn't affect everyone on the planet, but the people, his friends, his families, his fellow student, the fellow students. And so that's why when Voldemort tried to silence the crowd, it didn't work. Their voices broke through because of Harry's sacrifice. And then, now, I guess, I don't know if I've already covered my first
point. Okay, no, it's okay, it's fine. It's interesting.
I have to bring up Snape.
Yeah, okay, Snape too. That one's a little bit self-explanatory.
Yeah, I'm
just, I wouldn't as quickly say that's the main theme. And I think the two series are a little similar in that they've got a lot of themes, and there's kind of one or a few that stick out, maybe Balance and Avatar, maybe this theme of love in Harry Potter. That but there's just a lot of like stereotypical fantasy themes, and it's just because the series are so epic. Mentioning the sacrifice, that reminded me when I've compared these two before on the podcast. Aang in the season 3 finale has to go off on his own in order to defeat Ozai, which is Harry Potter has to go off on his own to defeat Voldemort. And I both get me very mad when I rewatch them because they make no sense. And why do you have to go yourself? But yeah, that's also a fantasy trope thing.
Yeah, because Katara and Hermione to Harry and Katara and, well, everyone, they're like, you don't have to do this on your own. Which actually, I'm pretty sure is a direct quote from Harry Potter and Deathly and the Half-Blood Prince. I'm pretty sure that is a direct quote.
Yeah, I was so excited during the season finale for like the whole gang to go defeat Ozai, and I'm just like, no, I'm going to go on my own. Okay.
I got this.
And his friends are also helping, though. Like, we see... Yeah. Hermione
also kind of had his, not literally, but they all thought he died when he went to visit the lion turtle.
Yeah, I mean, that's the main difference between the two.
Literal death versus metaphorical death.
Yeah, but...
No, they didn't think he died, though.
The actual deaths happened, like, they weren't... The death of Harry happened at the very end. But Aang didn't actually die, and he actually died in the second season. Which is of course, they did. I thought there was definitely concern when he was fighting Ozai because they didn't really know where he was until they saw him. And Katara and Zuko had no idea what was going on.
Okay, so in the season 3 finale, June was like, "He's not on this planet," and they're really worried, and they kind of thought he's dead. But okay, now I forgot what the other point I was going to make was.
I have a point.
Yes.
Just one difference, the main difference between the two is, like we were saying, that all the heroes should have fought together. The main difference is there's only one battle, really, to fight at Hogwarts, whereas in the season 3 finale, they had to take out the airships, they had to take care of Azula and Ozai, so it actually, in the end, it makes sense that they split up. I'm not happy about it.
If you're done, counterpoint. There were we have my favorite part of the movie when the statues jump down. We have the statues fighting the giants. We have the adults fighting. We have the students fighting, which most of them are adults. But then they're going after Nagini. And
continue.
And then the actual it is the Battle of Hogwarts. But also in the Great Hall, we have multiple battles going on. Ginny and Bellatrix, and the awesome moment of Molly Weasley. We have McGonagall and I think it was Flitwick, and they were fighting Voldemort. And then Harry reveals himself, and it's everyone is away. And then it's Harry and Voldemort. Just like it was just, I almost said Sozin, Ozai and Aang.
Yeah. What I was saying is the main difference is those were very spread out. Azula, the airships, and Ozai. With the Battle of Hogwarts, it was pretty much all in like a 1 mile radius that they could deal with.
Well, yeah, because
Yeah, it's on the Hogwarts grounds. So
yes, I do see that point, but I would just say it's incorrect to say that there was just one because there were several very important things, very important battles, things that were decided in the Battle of Hogwarts that are separate.
Go ahead.
I'm not trying to shoot you down. I wanted to bring that up.
Yeah, I did misspeak a little bit. There are definitely a lot of things that they had to deal with during Hogwarts.
It's, of course, we have people in the Fire Nation, then we have the airships over the Earth Kingdom, because that was they were having this giant movement. They're dealing with an entire, I guess it's a continent.
Sure, an army.
Yeah, well, the entire, Earth Kingdom, I guess it's all of the continent, I don't know. So we have it spread over an entire continent, as opposed to this little area in Scotland.
Yeah.
So I do understand the spread outness, yes. So it's not as obvious in Harry Potter.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just saying, I definitely did misspeak. It's not only one problem. I was more speaking to the fact that it's more contained in a single area.
I understand what you mean. Harry Potter, it's the same thing, and Avatar, it's like completely separate things, completely different situations. Where they're more related in Harry Potter, I guess. But back to another point, it's a very similar structures of their finales, where, the hero goes on his own, and then Harry and Ron have to go do a task, Katara and Zuko go off to do something, and then Suki, Sokka, Toph go off to do something. Yeah. Frustratingly similar finales, in my opinion.
Well, I'm surprised, really. I guess you could maybe bring up something that, I can't think of anything to relate to it. How we have this character who really, I thought of it, wow. We have these characters who are really, looked down upon, Neville Longbottom. And then, in this moment, he becomes a hero when he kills Nagini. And then I guess what I thought of, Zuko's not really, looked down upon, but then he takes that hit for Katara.
Well, he's already become a good guy. Well, Neville's
but this really
guy,
shows, so. I would say, to Katara, his commitment. I mean, he just saved her life.
After she threatened to kill him.
It's just the closest thing I could see relating to. Because really, I was about to say that, we don't have really that Neville Longbottom moment. But
I'm just laughing at the comparison between Zuko and Neville.
It's pretty great.
Okay, another Stark similar I remember we've mentioned on the podcast before. The Dumbledore Grindelwald backstory compared to Roku Sozin.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
They're
the same thing, pretty much.
Yes, they are.
Except
we don't have a cool prison scene.
Yeah. I assume that's a fantasy trope, but they're still remarkably similar. And they came out around the same time too. Season 3 in the last book.
This is true, yes.
Yeah. Interesting.
Wasn't season 3 2000? I know it ended in 2008, right?
Season 3 was 2007, 2008.
Yeah, and the book, and I know Deathly Hallows was released in 2007.
Yep, so same time, yeah.
Yep, awesome. I mean, I wasn't just questioning you there.
Basically, J.K. Rowling is Mike and Brian, is what we're saying. They're the same.
Yeah. Well, they're
same
both
person.
Gods of their medium.
Yes. Okay, let's start to wrap things up. Do we have any... The rest of the bullet points, we actually already kind of hit on all of them.
It's hard not to... Just
yeah.
Word vomit all of it because it's so amazing.
Do we have any other random comparisons or contrasts you make?
I'd say both in Avatar and Harry Potter, they have to learn their skills and they have to earn them and develop them. You know, it's like in Avatar, you really have to train in order to learn the bending skills, and a lot of the, say books 1 through 6 or 5 is a lot about them learning new spells and, having to work at it. They don't just magically get their powers. Which is
good. They have a lot of potential, both the main characters, but they're not, immediately godly amazing. They have the potential to be good at it, but they still have to put some work in.
That's where they answer the call. They choose to... I keep talking about the hero's journey. I just love that, okay?
Well, both stories are very reliant upon it, yeah.
Yeah.
And I just thought of how it's not the same, but how we see with Snape, how he just degrades Harry constantly and constantly, so does Draco, because they think, all these things happen, especially with Lockhart, that, all these things happen just because he's famous. And then with Aang, we have a lot, especially I can't think of what the episode's called. The Storm.
Yeah. 112.
And you know that fisherman and everyone's like, "You left."
Yeah, that's, you know, the Storm.
Who are we to, you know, just, yeah, you're the Avatar, but you left. I'm like, what are you? You're a 12-year-old boy and kind of similar. Just it was just an errant thought. So okay. Yeah, bad. I apologize, and I would like to apologize for my love rant, but I feel very strongly about it. So,
well, you are not alone in love for Harry Potter. I think it's probably the most universally liked thing, and maybe ever.
So I would say yes. Harry Potter is more friendship than like romantic.
Oh, definitely. Mm. We didn't bring that up. What? How did that happen? That was a bullet point too.
Themes of friendship. We kind of brought that up a little bit. Yeah. But yeah.
It just didn't get the love rant. It deserves the love rant, but it doesn't get it.
Avatar is also more friendship, I would say. Like, there's the Katang, but that's not. You look at the percentage of the show which is getting, it's much less than it should be, but it's actually not that high.
It's summed up in the quote, friendships can last more than one lifetime. That's really, I feel like that sums up Avatar and Korra very, very well.
Korra focuses too much on the whole Korra Mako thing.
Tenzin and Lin and Korra, and Katara, like the friendship part, yes, Korra is not, because Korra will never be Avatar, okay, but...
Korra will never be Avatar. That's an interesting quote.
She's the Avatar, yes, but not Avatar.
Exactly.
Not the Last Airbender.
Yes.
Well, she could be. Well,
unless Tenzin
decides to go rogue and kill all the other.
There's a point where we thought all there's the DF April Fools. Frank, I don't know if you guys saw it, but it was a fake episode summary on Tumblr where all the airbenders die in a fire and Korra is the last airbender again.
And they change.
Yes. Yeah.
Those are now the last airbender again.
Yes. It was pretty great. Okay. Final thoughts. I think we covered a lot of stuff. This is a long minicast, so we're good.
Our long minicast is no longer minicast.
Yeah, basically. Although I don't know what to pair this with. We'll see.
It's just a jumbo minicast.
Yeah. This is true. I've been your main host, Dylan. Mini hosts have been Ari, Delaney, Colin, James, Philip. I had a produced podcast. Alan Fang is owned by Jake. What do you guys want to end on? A lot of choices.
Some weird mixture of Katang and like Harry Ginny.
No,
and
whistling the Harry Potter theme.
We should not end on that.
Let's not get sued by Warner Brothers.
This is true.
I feel like Harry Potter's popular enough now that it's almost in the public domain, okay? It's almost there.
Warner Brothers is listening to this. We are really lucky.
They are not listening. That's for sure.
Warner Brothers loves us. I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm sure.
Yeah, we have... trying to think of something then, Don.
Friendship.
Yeah.
No. Expecto Patronum. Oh,
that's not it. We didn't even bring up Expecto Patronum in the podcast.
But it's Harry. It's so Harry Potter related. It's ridiculous.
No. Ooh, but we need something that represents both.
Relating Doctor Who to Harry Potter, which we discussed on, let's say, 2 weeks ago. I put them out in this order. There's an episode of Doctor Who where the character, I think, says Expecto Patronum in a situation for no reason. It's hilarious. Okay, anyway. I don't know. We've had no good suggestions here. Come on, guys. Step it up.
Avatar Potter. I don't know. The Last Wizard.
Pottertard, Avatar. No, that's bad. We shouldn't do that.
Should
be offending everybody.
Should be do. Wingardium Leviosa. Yep.
That's Wingardium Leviosa. Airbender.
What did we do? Okay, let's half of us say something Harry Potter has. Okay, say something like Harry Potter, a spell, and some of us say yep. Okay. This isn't going to work. I tried this for Doctor Who and it didn't work.
Well, I'll just say something different. Just go.
Okay, everyone just say something. 1, 2, 3.
Spectrum
Sempra.